Good morning. It's 7 o'clock on Thursday, the 6th of December. On RTE Radio 1, this is Morning Ireland with Cathal McCullough and Richard Downes.
Today, the fallout from the budget, political reaction from opposition parties and from the Green perspective. All this as economists mull over the implications of Brian Cowan's fourth outing as minister. And a good day to Barry News, perhaps. Aer Lingus increases charges on baggage for short-haul routes.
The news headlines: the reform of stamp duty has been given a broad welcome by the financial and property sectors. It's reported that the young man who shot dead 8 people at a shopping centre in the US had recently lost his job at McDonald's restaurant. And a report suggests that Irish airlines are the most complained about in Europe. The news in full from Brian Jennings.
There's been a strong welcome to a significant overhaul in the stamp duty regime announced in the budget. Banks, the construction industry and estate agents reacted positively to the reforms. However, the ESRI said it was opposed to cutting stamp duty to help construction. Our business correspondent, David Murphy.
Few argued stamp duty was an aggressive tax in need of some reform. When buyers reached a threshold, they would pay the higher rate on the entire purchase price of a home. Now the tax will be tiered and purchasers will pay less. On a €400,000 home, the reduction will be €10,750. The Construction Industry Federation said the measures should reactivate the sector. Estate agents Douglas Newman Good said the reforms would go some way to restore buyer confidence. Bank of Ireland and National Irish Bank welcomed the move. The Irish Auctioneers and Valuers Institute said the 9% rate would continue to apply to most commercial transactions. That, it said, was a missed opportunity to stem the flow of commercial investment out of Ireland. The independent think tank, the ESRI, said the cuts in stamp duty to stimulate construction were a bad idea. It said the property industry had been slowing to more sustainable levels after a decade of escalating prices. Few argued stamp duty was an aggressive tax in need of some reform. When buyers reached a threshold...
Last night, the government has won the first vote of budget night by 84 votes to 71. The vote was on a move to reduce duty on credit, debit and ATM cards and to increase the duty on cheques. Earlier, an increase of 30% in a packet of 20 cigarettes was passed unopposed. Ireland's first carbon budget will be presented to the Dáil today by the Minister for the Environment, John Gormley. It's understood the Green Party leader will outline the latest figures on our greenhouse gas emissions and explain how motor tax reforms will apply to new car purchases from July. Our environment correspondent, Paul Cunningham.
The carbon budget is, according to the Coalition, a new innovation aimed at putting climate change at the heart of government decision-making, particularly the financial cycle. It's expected it will identify just how much carbon dioxide the country is producing, from which sectors, and what measures can be employed to bring emissions down. RTE News understands draft figures for 2006 will show a small reduction in emissions, but Ireland will still be close to 25% above 1990 levels, rather than 13% specified by the Kyoto Protocol. In yesterday's budget, Finance Minister Brian Cowan said motor tax for existing cars will increase by 9.5% for up to 2.5-litre engines and by 11% for those above that. Minister Gormley is expected to announce that new cars from July 1st will encounter a staggered motor tax which is solely based on emissions, a further bid to incentivise people to go green. The government's stated aim is to reduce Ireland's emissions by 3% each year. Opposition parties will be keen to see how Minister Gormley identifies that extremely ambitious target will be achieved.
The Bank of England is coming under pressure to cut interest rates amid increasing evidence of an economic slowdown in the UK. The bank's Monetary Policy Committee, which will give details of its decision at midday, could cut rates by a quarter of 1% to 5.5% to help slow a drop in both house prices and in consumer confidence. Our London editor, Brian O'Connell.
The Bank of England has been in no hurry to cut rates, partially due to inflationary pressures, but with British business grappling with the credit crunch caused by the Northern Rock crisis, the Monetary Policy Committee may decide today to cut rates from 5.75% to 5.5%. Economic growth is already predicted to fall in Britain next year. House prices fell by 1.1% last month. That's the biggest drop for almost a year, and the first time since 1995 that prices have dropped 3 months in a row. Petrol in Britain is now through the psychologically important £1 a litre barrier, but when they come to make their announcement at midday, the Bank of England may just decide that their worries about inflation are outweighed by signs that the UK economy is heading for a sharp downturn. Brian O'Connell, RTE News, London.
In the United States, a 19-year-old man has shot dead 8 people at a shopping centre in Nebraska. The gunman then turned the rifle on himself. 5 other people were wounded, 2 of them critically, in the attack at the Westroads Mall in Omaha. Most of the victims were shot inside a department store near the children's clothing area. It's understood they'd been Christmas shopping at the time. A note was later found at the home of the gunman's mother. Our correspondent Robert Short.
The man who carried out yesterday's shooting was identified as 19-year-old Robert Hawkins. He lives in a city close to Omaha. Last night, a woman identified as Hawkins' landlady by local and national media said she believed the young man had been upset at losing his job at a local McDonald's franchise. A statement issued by the fast food chain said it was cooperating with the ongoing police investigation. Police have not speculated as to what Hawkins' motive may have been. Hawkins carried out the shootings with what's described as an assault rifle. His victims were 5 women and 3 men. 2 of those injured are still in a critical condition. Robert Short, RTE News.
A man in his 20s has been charged in connection with the theft of 450 kegs from the Guinness Brewery in Dublin last week. He's to appear at Kilmainham District Court in 2 weeks' time. A second man arrested on Tuesday has been released and a file has been prepared for the Director of Public Prosecutions. A trailer carrying €64,000 worth of beer and stout was stolen from the factory depot on Victoria Quay. Gardaí say some of the property was recovered during a search in County Meath on Monday. Talks in the Bus Éireann school bus dispute will resume later today. The Labour Relations Commission is to contact SIPTU negotiators and company representatives this morning. The dispute centres on pay and conditions for part-time drivers. Driver represented by SIPTU are seeking pay parity with full-time drivers and access to benefits such as sick pay, holiday pay, overtime rates and the occupational pension scheme. Industrial action deferred last week is likely to go ahead tomorrow if no resolution is found. A young boy died after he was hit by a car outside Newtownards in County Down. The accident happened on the main Belfast to Newtownards dual carriageway at 6:30 yesterday evening. It's believed the boy was aged 12. A report from the European Consumer Centre has found that Irish airlines are the most complained about in Europe. The report, which is being launched in Brussels today, reveals that Irish airlines are responsible for almost a quarter of all complaints by airline passengers. Paul Colgan reports.
For the second year running, Irish Airlines are the most complained about in Europe, according to the report by the ECC. It also found that Irish passengers made more complaints against airlines in 2007 than any other nationality in Europe. This is an increase on the previous year, when Irish people came 7th on the list. The main issues for airline passengers were in relation to lost luggage, cancelled flights and delays. The ECC said the report proves that existing passenger rights legislation is too vague and is not being properly enforced. ECC Ireland Director Tina Leonard said the report proved that not much had changed during the last year, but she was hopeful that 2008 would be different.
There was no winner of the midweek lotto jackpot worth more than €6.5 million. The numbers drawn were 5, 22, 24, 29, 34 and 38. The bonus number was 39. Now the time is coming up to 7:09.
RTE Radio 1 weather with Dimplex Home Heating. Make your house a home with energy-efficient heating from Dimplex.
Widespread rain heavy in many areas. The rain will ease off in northern areas for a time today, but will persist in the south and spread to all parts again during the afternoon. Very windy with highest temperatures 12 to 14 degrees. And there's a warning that west to southwest winds will reach gale or strong gale force today on all coastal waters and on the Irish Sea. Now with news of traffic and travel, here's Nicola Hudson of AA Roadwatch.
Thank you, Will. Those stormy conditions have left quite dangerous road surfaces around the country, with surface water, minor flooding and fallen debris reported in many areas. We'd ask you to slow down and take care this morning. Weather has impacted on ferry sailings today towards Holyhead. The Stena Line HSS Dunleary to Holyhead route has been cancelled. Booked passengers there will be accommodated motorists on the Stena Adventurer from Dublin Port. That departs at 9:15 tonight. Meanwhile, booked foot passengers will be accommodated on the Irish Ferries Ulysses sailing. That leaves Dublin Port at 5 to 8 this evening as well. Now, Irish Ferries Jonathan Swift services on the Dublin to Holyhead route have also been cancelled today. Again, passengers will be accommodated on the Ulysses cruise ferry sailing at 5 past 8 and also at 5 to 9 tonight. Now, in Dublin on the M50 southbound, traffic is slow moving already between junctions 5 and 7. That's Finglas to Lucan. And a crash has just occurred on the M50 northbound at the approach to the Westlink, which is likely to start impacting on traffic very shortly. The wet weather had an impact on all commuter routes yesterday. We saw very heavy volumes coming into the city, and the same is likely again today on the Lucan Road, the Naas Road, and also coming up from Wicklow on the N11. In County Leash, roadworks get underway this morning at 7 a.m. at Mount Rath on the Dublin to Limerick Road, that's the N7, and then Dublin to Cork traffic through Leash will be affected on the N8 between Abbey Leaks and Durrow, where roadworks continue until next Wednesday. Nicola Hudson, AE Roadwatch.
Nicola, thanks very much indeed. Coming up to 11 minutes past 7, time for It Says in the Papers next with Paddy Clancy.
A mixed reaction to the budget, but mainly favourable. Although Harry McGee in the Irish Examiner says that Brian Cowan made an astonishing reverse on stamp duty, the centrepiece of the budget, and that has left him exposed to charges of political hypocrisy. The Irish Times believes it was a budget for this time. The budget is over, the pace of economic growth is slipping. Sorry, the boom is over. The pace of economic growth is slipping, it editorialises. Budgeting in a boom is easy work. Budgeting in tougher times is a much more demanding business. Mr. Cowan's overarching concern was to strengthen confidence in the economy's future performance. On the credit side, he performed the basic budgetary tasks well. On the debit side, the restructuring of stamp duties could be both ill-timed and ill-judged. Cowan's Big Houdini Act blares the main headline in the Irish Daily Mail above Chief Political Correspondent John Lee's story that the Finance Minister performed a budgetary conjuring trick worthy of Houdini himself by borrowing money for what Lee calls the stamp duty giveaway and increases in infrastructure and welfare spending. The Finance Minister avoided the predicted tax attack on middle and high earners. The Irish Independent refers to Canny Cowan and editorialises that the budget was designed to maintain and build confidence. The Irish Sun calls Mr. Cowan Robin Hood because the paper says he took a little from the rich to give to the poor. The plight of Katie French continues to occupy much space, and the Independent has discovered that she wasn't taken ill at a house in Ashbourne, as all papers have been reporting, but some distance away in the tiny village of Kilmessan, and that she was not at a party but was simply a visitor to the house. Tom Brady and Anne-Marie Walsh report Gardaí as saying they have no concrete evidence to indicate that anything untoward took place in the hours prior to her illness. The tabloids insist she was taken ill at a party in Ashbourne, and the Irish Daily Mirror carries a grainy picture of a male friend who, reporter Paul Martin writes, was one of the pals who tried to help Ms. French. The man told the Mirror he helped her, but refused to say any more. Other stories now, and the Irish Daily Star claims an exclusive with its report that Joe O'Reilly, who murdered his wife, plays in goal on a soccer team in prison. Enda Kenny told the Doyle that second-level students can buy ecstasy tablets for as little as €2.50. That's in most papers. The Mirror gives prominence to Mr. Kenny's call for voluntary drug testing in schools to stop what he called the infestation of drugs. Also in most papers, 9 years for a 27-year-old man for imprisoning and violently sexually assaulting a 6-year-old girl. The Independent gives prominence to the detail that a judge had considered giving him life. And finally, for now, 105-years-old Kathleen Murray delighted her family with a few dance steps at her recent birthday at the Sacred Heart Hospital in Roscommon. The Mirror headlines the secret of her long life, a glass of sherry and 20 cigarettes a day.
She'll have to pay an extra 30 cent as a result of the budget. Thanks very much, Paddy Clancy. The time is exactly 14 minutes past 7. Time for the early business news, which comes from Christopher McKevitt, who's not here. Where exactly are you, Christopher?
Good morning, Cathal. I'm in the round room at the Mansion House in Dublin City Centre, where a number of a number of post-budget breakfasts are taking place for the business community. This one organised by accountants KPMG. We'll come to the budget in a moment, but first this morning, the markets will be eagerly watching this morning's trading statement from AIB Group issued in the last few minutes. The bank is saying it's targeting growth of around 13% in 2007 earnings per share, and that, it says, is in line with previous guidance issued in August. It talks, though, about strong or significant headwinds for the sector arising from the turbulence in the markets in the second half of the year. AIB, though, this morning will be looking to reassure the markets because it's saying it expects to achieve profit growth in each of its operating divisions and at overall group level in 2008. It has, though, deferred being specific until the bank presents its full results for the year, which it will do towards the end of February. It does say, though, this morning that its bad debt charge in 2008, it's expecting that to rise compared to what it says was a very low level in 2007. Will the markets like that from AIB? Are they looking for firmer guidance from the bank at this point? We'll be talking to an expert in half an hour. Staying with the markets, though, on Wall Street last night, the Dow closed 1.5% higher. The Nasdaq was up 1.8%. That on some favourable economic data out of the US. In overnight Asia trade, the Japanese Nikkei index of shares ended 1.7% higher. We're going back to the budget, though, this morning. We're joined by Jim Cleary, partner with KPMG in Dublin. Jim, the business angle to this budget, is the business community going to like what Brian Cowan told them yesterday?
The business community should be happy enough, Christopher. Basically, there was no changes in the main taxes, and that will keep people reasonably happy. Business will be delighted to see that PRSI threats of increases weren't carried through, so that will help not add to the cost line in various businesses.
In the area of stamp duty, that was the big, perhaps, surprise overhaul that we hadn't anticipated coming up, at least until the immediate hours before Mr. Cowan presented his budget. What's the property industry likely to say?
Yeah, I'd say the property industry will be quite happy with this, that he stepped up and recognised the reality of what's going on. The stamp duty changes are quite radical. They're confusing because he mentioned 7% and 9%. But in reality, any house below $1 million is probably going to see stamp duty fall by a third. Any house below $2 million will see it fall by about a quarter. So that is quite a serious change.
What did he have to say about competitiveness? Because that obviously has been one of the key bugbears for business in this country over the last number of years.
I was a little disappointed now. He didn't really focus on competitiveness or major on it in his speech, which is disappointing. He had an opportunity to lower PRSI, to lower business costs, and he really only tinkered with the allowances and bans for employees. So employees don't end up a whole lot better off out of this budget, and that won't help competitiveness.
Jim Cleary of KPMG, thank you very much for joining us for the early business news this morning. On the currencies, the Bank of England, ahead of a Bank of England decision on rates today, the euro worth just under 72 pence sterling and $1.46 US cents. Of course, the European Central Bank also has a rates decision today. Rates, though, unexpected to change. They're likely to stay at 4%. Back to you in studio.
Thanks very much, Chris. The time now is just after 17 minutes past seven. The budget, of course, is out, and you've been hearing some of the reaction there. Broadly mixed, I suppose, is the way you describe it. Far from enthusiastic in some quarters. What about the political reaction, though? Let's find out next from our political correspondent, David McCullough, who's with us now. David, one of the great set-piece events of Irish politics. The minister does his photo call to begin with. He comes into the chamber. What was the atmosphere like in the chamber? And particularly, I suppose, the back benches. People are keeping their eye on those very closely at the moment.
Yeah, they are. I mean, the atmosphere was flat. If you had to pick one word to describe Brian Cowan's fourth budget, it would have to be something like dull. Now, dull isn't necessarily a bad thing in the economic circumstances that we're in at the moment, and it may prove that he's been prudent rather than unimaginative. The reaction on the backbenchers, the Fianna Fáil backbenchers have been used in recent years to a whooping and a hollering when the Minister for Finance is delivering his budget speech, because there's plenty of goodies in it that they can go out and tell their constituents all about. This time it was very muted reaction. There wasn't really any clapping during the course of the speech. He got the traditional standing ovation at the end, but then had he decreed that every couple's firstborn was to be taken off to Mountjoy in the morning, he'd probably still get a standing ovation, so that probably doesn't tell us that much. So it was pretty flat, it was steady as she goes, it was prudent, it was cautious, not the sort of stuff to get the backbenchers wildly cheering.
What about hostages to fortune? There always are a few, aren't there, in budgets? I mean, you think about health getting, an 8% increase or thereabouts in spending. Medical inflation is already pretty high. That equates, and the opposition were saying this, that equates more or less to flatlining in terms of a flat scenario in terms of spending. So that's going to cause problems next year, isn't it? Because we've had the problems already in cancer.
Yeah, well, as you say, there's always hostages to fortune in a budget. With Brian Cowan, you don't get as many or as dramatic hostages to fortune as you used to get with Charlie McCreevy. And there was a couple of people saying yesterday that you really would miss Charlie around the place because there was always something in his budgets that would tend to explode into controversy. Yeah, I mean, the problem with health, obviously, we've been round the houses on this one, but it seems to be a black hole that you throw as much money as you like into it and the service improvements don't come. The government would argue that their reforms are finally beginning to bite and everything will work itself out. I think in terms of public reaction, more than the spending aspect of it, I think the public reaction to the increase in charges might be quite interesting to watch in the next couple of weeks.
And then we had stamp duty. It's really the big story that's come out of the budget. Evidence, you know, backbenchers presumably would say that Mr. Cowan is pragmatic and sensible. For the others, it's a kind of panic reaction a little too late.
Well, the minister was pretty strong on this when he was challenged on that particular point last night on primetime, for instance. I saw him defending it as a counter-cyclical measure, which is that if you have a market blazing away, a big bonfire of people throwing money hand over fist at houses, you don't throw petrol on it. However, when the market quietens down a bit, then it's time to take a measure which might increase the amount of houses that are being sold. So we really won't know for another 3 to 6 months how it's going down. We won't know whether he's prescribed the right medicine for the housing market. If he has, and if the housing market gently reflates, you don't have the runaway inflation in housing prices that we've had, and yet houses start to sell again, I think it'll be shown to have worked. But I mean, Fine Gael and Labour were making the point, if he'd done this 6 months ago, we wouldn't have had the slump in the first place, and his revenue position would have been a lot healthier yesterday, and he would have been able to do a whole lot more.
OK, David, thanks for that. And later in the programme, we'll be hearing about the green aspects of the budget with our environment correspondent, Paul Cunningham. But for the moment, David, thanks very much. 21 minutes past seven.
On yesterday's programme, three people from different backgrounds told Conor Hunt what they wanted to hear in the budget. What do they think now of what they heard? Conor's been talking to them again. First, single man Anthony Egan.
Well, I'm disappointed, quite frankly. The rise in welfare payments, which the minister says is above the rate of inflation, is, shall we say, disingenuous.
57-year-old Dubliner Anthony Egan is on disability allowance and works on a community employment scheme. Before the budget, he was looking for an increase to his weekly take-home pay. He's set to receive an extra €12.
It's not above the rate of inflation if you consider the staples of life, which people on a low income need. Because those things apparently seem to rise in price faster than sort of luxury items which we're not concerned with. Trust me, I'm not shopping in Brown Thomas. I'm going to Tesco's and Dunn's and going to the cheap cuts of everything.
Did you find any positive thing to come out of the budget at all for you?
Well, there's a lot of positives, but they don't relate to me or to people on a limited income. The stamp duty, there's no way on this earth I'm ever going to be buying a house or a car, so it's, I didn't pay a great deal of attention to that. There are some positives, but it's just that the fact is for those on a limited income, it's not generous, it's not even really covering the cost of inflation in relationship to what you have to buy.
It's a different story for Francis Fullen. He's married and has four children. Financially, he describes himself as being comfortable. Before the budget, he was looking for an increase in investment in primary schools, changes to stamp duty, and not to be hit too severely on motor tax.
Overall, given the economic circumstances, I think the minister has shown a good steady hand at the tiller. Like from our own personal point of view, motor tax gone up by 11%. Is obviously going to be is in the negative category. Ban, tax bans going out is good.
And you were also looking in particular at the area of education and primary school education. And I see there's an additional allocation of €95 million in the capital funding programme for primary schools. Are you happy with that?
Yeah, well, I mean, it's great that there's more money, but I think there are 4,000 schools in the country, and you know, 95 million doesn't go, that doesn't go that far, doesn't stretch that far. Albeit it's part of a wider capital programme. I mean, reducing stamp duty down to 7% on houses up to €1 million is certainly very positive. But overall, I think it's a positive budget, and it's a steady as she goes budget, and something that I would welcome. I think it's a sensible budget.
Lorna Nicholson is a single mother from Sligo. She was hoping for an increase in the single parents allowance and other child payments.
Overall, I would say it was a very cautious budget in relation to childcare. And in the area of single parenting alone, the increase is just about protect people from inflation.
Mm. The increase in the one-parent family payment goes from €207 to €221.
Yeah, big deal.
That's an extra €14.
Yeah, not a great increase. I wouldn't be happy with that. Yeah, no, I wouldn't. And I mean, the cost in general for rearing a child in Ireland, you won't get too far on the increases that the government have given us.
You also have the children's allowance increase, the back to school clothing allowance also increases, I believe, by €20 up to 200.
Yeah, okay, fair enough. Not in the long run, it wouldn't make too much of a difference, no. The ECS payment, which has gone from 1,000 per child per year, is gone up €100. That's okay, but that only lasts until the child is six.
Yesterday you were saying to us that you're just keeping your head above water financially. Will this make a difference to you now?
No. I wouldn't say it would make too much of a difference to me, no.
Lorna Nicholson from Sligo there, and that was Conor Hunt reporting. 25 and a half minutes past seven.
Well, the price of a flight is going to cost even more for passengers, and that's because Aer Lingus has hiked up their baggage charges. The increase for checked-in baggage at the airport, that is, if you turn up without booking it in advance, goes from €8 to €12. That's a 50% increase. And the fee for baggage booked online is going to go up from €6 to €9. That's if you plan it in advance and do it on the website and what have you. That's a 50% increase. Again, the Consumers Association isn't particularly happy about this. Keane McCormack spoke to Michael Kilcoyne.
We are amazed that they have decided to increase the price of luggage by 33.3%. There is absolutely no justification for it. Certainly their costs haven't increased by that amount, and they see it as an opportunity of extracting further revenue from the hard-pressed consumer and the hard-pressed traveller, and they don't let the opportunity go. I think what's most disappointing about it all is the failure of the Minister with responsibility for consumer affairs to put in place the necessary legislation to ensure that airlines on at least a very frequent basis decide to introduce a plethora of different charges and increase them almost at will. And there is very little the consumer can do about it.
That's Michael Kilcoyne on the line now. Enda Corneal, Aer Lingus' commercial director. That's what it's about, really, isn't it? You can increase your charges here, there and everywhere. There's nothing anybody can do about it. And these latest increases are quite steep. They're 50%.
Well, good morning. I think the industry for some time now has been breaking out individual charges and in doing that, offering customers choice and options. Not everyone carries a bag, so therefore not everybody ought to pay for a bag. This increase is really bringing our own baggage charges into line with our low-cost carriers across our competitors across the industry.
Well, I was just looking at that. I mean, you are more expensive, aren't you, than your competitors? Ryanair, their fee went up to €6, and those who fail to pay online, that goes up to 12, so that's in line with yours. But you're, 50% more expensive than Ryanair if you book online?
No, I think that the key here is transparency. If you look very closely, the Ryanair charge is €6, but there's an obligatory €3 charge, a check-in charge, which brings it to 9. If you look at the charge at the airport, our charge is at 12, Ryanair's is at 15. So I think the key here is that if you're going to levy these charges and if customers are going to pay them, our view is, unlike other carriers, that you need to make it very clear to the customer, make it easy for them to pay, and make it quick so that it doesn't slow them down going through the airport.
Yeah, but What about the from the consumer point of view? I mean, I note this morning that we heard that Irish Airlines are the most complained about in Europe. 70% of those complaints in relation to the Irish sector is about Ryanair, but 30% are about Aer Lingus as well. And then you chose yesterday, the budget day, the big kind of set piece of political life to make this announcement. Is that not just a deeply cynical move on your part, which will make people feel that they're having the wool pulled over their eyes?
Absolutely not. I mean, a lot of technical planning and testing goes into this type of price change. We have a very strict schedule for any development on aerlingus.com. It's not driven by whatever stories happen to be in the media. We manage it very tightly. For example, last Saturday, we celebrated our 10 millionth booking on aerlingus.com, and that just shows how far we've come.
Right. Well, is this a fuel surcharge, effectively, in any other name? I mean, shouldn't you really just put a fuel surcharge on your short-haul flights? Because it's not really about baggage, is it? It's about
the increased costs which you have as an airline. No, absolutely not. We don't have a fuel surcharge on short-haul. This is an optional charge. If you don't carry a bag, you don't get charged it. A fuel surcharge covers all passengers on long-haul. So, no, it's absolutely not a fuel surcharge in disguise. It's an optional charge. And we've worked very hard to ensure that if a customer has to pay it, they've got unlimited opportunities to pay for it at the lower rate on the web. And if they pay at the airport, we've enabled all 40 of our machines to collect payments so there's no queuing. So trying to make it easy for customers to get through the airport.
OK, Enda Cornell, Commercial Director of Aer Lingus, thanks for joining us this morning. The time now 7:30. Time for a news summary next from Brian.
Thank you, Richard. There's been a strong welcome for a significant overhaul in the stamp duty regime announced in the budget. Banks, the construction industry and estate agents reacted positively to the reforms. However, the ESRI said it was opposed to cutting stamp duty to help construction. Meanwhile, last night the government won the first vote of budget night by 84 votes to 71. The vote was on a move to reduce duty on credit, debit and ATM cards and to increase the duty on cheques. Earlier, an increase of 30% on a packet of 20 cigarettes was passed unopposed. Ireland's first carbon budget will be presented to the Dáil today by the Minister for the Environment, John Gormley. It's understood the Green Party leader will outline the latest figures on our greenhouse gas emissions and explain how motor tax reforms will apply to new car purchases from July. The Bank of England is coming under pressure to cut interest rates amid increasing evidence of an economic slowdown in the UK. The bank's Monetary Policy Committee, which will give details of its decision at midday, could cut rates by 0.25% to 5.5% to help slow a drop in both house prices and in consumer confidence. In the United States, a 19-year-old man has shot dead 8 people at a shopping centre in Nebraska. The gunman then turned the rifle on himself. 5 other people were wounded, 2 of them critically, in the attack at the West Roads Mall in Omaha. There was no winner of the midweek lotto jackpot worth more than €6.5 million. The numbers drawn were 5, 22, 24, 29, 34 and 38. The bonus number was 39. Now the weather, widespread rain heavy in many areas. The rain will ease off in northern areas for a time today, but will persist in the south and spread to all parts again during the afternoon. Very windy with highest temperatures 12 to 14 degrees. And there's a warning that west to southwest winds will reach gale or strong gale force today on all coastal waters and on the Irish Sea. Now with news of traffic and travel, here's Nicola Hudson of A Roadwatch.
Thank you. And stormy conditions have left surface water and debris down on the roads on many routes. In Cork, we have reports that branches of a tree are blocking one side of the road between Mill Street and Ballydaly just after a bad bend. Ferry sailings have been affected by the weather. Stenaline HSS services on the Dunleary to Holyhead route have been cancelled and the Irish Ferries Jonathan Swift services have also been cancelled today. As expected, commuter traffic into Dublin has also been affected by the bad weather. Drivers advise us that traffic is already very slow on the N4 Lucan Road from Junction 2A at Selbridge. On the M50 southbound, it's slow moving between junctions 5 and 7, that's Finglas to Lucan, and approaching Dublin from the south, so the Rock Road is very heavy from Temple Hill to the Merrion Gates, and the N11 is already busy inbound from Fox Rock Church. In Galway, meanwhile, we're getting reports in that traffic lights are out of action on the Newcastle Road at the Quincentennial Bridge. Nicola Hudson, AA Roadwatch.
25 to 8, you're listening to Morning Ireland. Michael Corcoran has the sport.
Carl, thanks. Beginning with soccer, Arsenal have extended their lead at the top of the Premier League after a 1-1 draw against Newcastle United at St James's Park last night. Adebayor put the visitors ahead after only 4 minutes of the game. Stephen Taylor equalised after an hour. That eases the pressure really on Sam Allardyce. Arsenal are now 4 points clear of Manchester United. Everton are through to the knockout stages of the UEFA Cup as Group A winners after a 1-0 win over the Russian champions Zenit St Petersburg. Tim Cahill scoring the only goal 5 minutes from time. The Everton manager David Moyes was pleased with the win and his side's European performances to date.
The group we were in when we first saw it, you know, a German side, a Russian side, a Dutch side, and obviously a lot of the Greek sides have made it as well. We had Larissa. It was a tough group, and for us to win the three games has been terrific.
And tonight, for a while, it looked as though that goal wasn't going to come in the second half, but right at the death, Tim Cahill pops up again.
Yeah, that's right. But I think if you look even at my programme notes, I talked about how patient you need to be. And we've learnt a lot in the games we've been in Europe so far. Goals have been scored late in games. We've done that in this competition already. So we were always capable of doing that. And thoroughly deserved to win the game anyway. We hit the post, missed a penalty kick. And I thought we constantly had them under pressure throughout the game.
That's the Everton manager David Moyes there. Mick McCarthy has ruled himself out of the running for the vacant job as the South Korea manager. The Korean Football Association had claimed yesterday that McCarthy and Gerard Houllier were the two main contenders for the post. In Gaelic games, the Ulster Council of the GEA will meet later on tonight to discuss the player grants issue amid growing opposition to the deal within the province. Over 300 people attended a meeting in Toom last night to rally support against the grants. The meeting agreed to lobby the Ulster Council and Central Council of the GEA to defer the new arrangement. The grants issue is one of the issues on the agenda on Saturday's Central Council meeting. We'll have more on that shortly after 8:30. And golf play underway on the opening day of the Alfred Dunhill Championship in South Africa. Peter Lawrie is 2 over after 8. Stephen Brown is tied for 18th at level par after 7. Darren Clark has yet to tee off there. The early leader is George Coetzee of South Africa at 3 under after 9. In racing, an impressive performance by Dylan Thomas this morning at Sha Tin Racecourse in Hong Kong ahead of the Cathay Pacific Hong Kong Vaz this coming weekend. The Aidan O'Brien trained colt was drawn 7th in this morning's barrier draw and will face 12 others in the €1.4 million event. Other Irish interest is Arch Rebel in the Vaz and Excellent Art, who runs in the mile event, both also impressed on the track today. In rugby, the Leinster team to play Edinburgh in tomorrow night's Heineken Cup game at the RDS will be named at lunchtime today. Brian O'Driscoll is their main injury worry. Wasps are one of 6 unbeaten teams in the competition to date. They face a trip to Claremont this weekend, boosted by the return to fitness of prop Phil Vickery. James Haskell is another player who's caught the eye for the defending champions, and they're sure to include Laurence Dallaglio in their side for the trip to France.
We've got everyone back from the World Cup now, kind of, you know, lots of guys bedded in. We're in a decent run of form. We've won our last 5 or 6 games, you know, nice blend of youth and experience, and you know, Phil Vickery, England captain's back from fitness now, so you know, it all bodes well. But we're up against a very tough team. I think they're, you know, one of the teams at the top of the French Championship, and you know, very exciting. You know, James is a wonderfully talented player. You know, I've obviously been helping him a little bit as well, along with everyone else at Wasps, and I think he's really emerging as a real talent. And you know, I'm 35; he's, you know, in his early 20s, so I don't think there's much of a threat there. I won't be playing rugby for too many more years, and he'll be playing for many, many more years.
That's a rather modest Laurence Dallaglio there. Spurs, Bolton and Aberdeen in UEFA Cup action later on tonight, and racing at home today is in Clonmel. The first of 6 is off at 1:15.
Michael, thanks very much indeed. The time now, 21 minutes to 8. We're going back to the budget next. And earlier this week, our reporter Emma McNamara spoke to 3 economists about their budget wish lists. At the time, they all agreed that the slowing housing market should be really just left alone. They all had different ideas on what other areas of the economy could be incentivised to help bring back and stimulate economic growth. Emma caught up with the same economists last night. They told her that by trying to fix the housing situation, builders and banks will be the real winners of Budget 2008. Can we fix it?
Yes, we can. Bob the Builder. Can we fix it? Yesterday, Finance Minister Brian Cowan announced changes in stamp duty, which he said will make it simpler and less expensive for people to buy and sell houses. He said that over recent months, the dynamics of the housing sector have changed fundamentally, and that his reforms will support the market. But budget watchers say the economy would have been better served by supports for other sectors.
And economist and broadcaster David McWilliams says the move says a lot about our government's relationship with the builders.
We've experienced what could be a financial coup, that basically a cabal of property owners in cahoots with the government have exercised a financial coup over the people. And they seem to believe that the pinnacle of our economic success is that house prices costing 15 times the average salary for the pleasure of living 50 miles away from where you work is the pinnacle of economic success. This is economic failure on a monumental scale and can only be explained by the government allowing a land cabal to hijack not only the economy, but probably more importantly, the economic debate.
With some relief, economist at the Economic and Social Research Institute, David Duffy, says it's not as severe a budget as we had been led to believe, with welcome increases in tax bans and tax credits. But he agrees that economic stimulation in this budget is in the wrong place.
Well, I think that probably the changes to stamp duty could have an effect in terms of stimulating activity. The difficulty there, though, is that it's stimulating activity in a domestic internal sector, and that concerns have been expressed over the past number of years about our continuing exposure to the property sector, and the measures in the budget, I think, continue that exposure.
And as reaction to Budget 08 goes, you couldn't get more glee than from the banks and estate agents. But what about the Irish Congress of Trade Unions? Less gleeful, but there is some light. ICTU economic advisor Paul Sweeney.
He stimulated the property sector, but I'm not sure that's the right sector to stimulate. We need to stimulate the trading sector. And our worry in Congress is that there wasn't enough emphasis on boosting skills, particularly with the recent job losses, where workers need to be upskilled urgently. And that is the future of the Irish economy, education and skills. There has been a switch to public transport, but it is far less than we thought it would be. And that, of course, helps competitiveness because workers can become more mobile and less congested.
So really, what should the Department of Finance have done? David McWilliams.
I thought they should have been much braver. I thought they should have said, OK, we've got a problem in construction. We need to fast track as quickly as possible infrastructure. We know this. The World Economic Forum was saying this last week about Ireland's infrastructure. And what do? They borrow 0.9% of GDP. They should have been borrowing much more and front-loading much more aggressively the rollout of the infrastructure project. This is a budget with absolutely no bearing on what's going on in the international economy, what's going on in our economy. It could have been issued last year or the year before.
Speaking of last year, in a very different political and economic climate last December, Finance Minister Brian Cowan was portrayed as Santa Claus after his giveaway budget. But what will the lasting image be this year?
Well, I think after last night's stamp duty debacle, he's got to be an Anglo-Saxon king who was called Æthelred the Unready. And this was in about the 9th century. And he was seen throwing these coins, gold coins, into the North Sea. And people said, what are you doing? And he raised a tax called Dangelt. And he melted down all the gold of England into coins, and he threw it into the sea in an effort to persuade the tide not to come in and subsequently persuade the Vikings, who were about to invade England, not to come and invade. Now, I think when you're trying to stem the tide of falling house prices with partial, half-baked and ultimately half-hearted changes in stamp duty, you're about as useful as an English king throwing money into the North Sea.
That's David McWilliams, the economist, Æthelred the Unready, ending that report from Emma McNamara. The time now, 16 minutes to 8.
Another mass murder in the US. This one involved a gunman in camouflage who was carrying a rifle. He walked into a department store in a shopping centre in Omaha and killed 8 people before turning the gun on himself.
With all the construction going off, it sounded like nail guns and whatnot going off. But then people just started running frantically, saying there's been a shooting in there. And I gathered my wife and kids and got out as soon as possible.
He just stood there with his arm like this, his hand straight up in the air, and shooting.
Susan, who works in the same floor I do, she said she walked over to the center of the atrium and it looked like a customer walked up alongside her. And the shooter reached over the top of the third floor and just shot the man. And she was right there, and as she looked, he was shot in the head.
Some of those caught up in that shooting at the Westroads Mall in Omaha, Nebraska. The toll from that shooting, 8 people dead, another 5 wounded, 2 of them critically. Our Washington correspondent Robert Short is on the line. Robert, what's known about the man who carried out the shooting and who eventually killed himself?
Well, he's identified as 19-year-old Robert Hawkins, and he's from a city called Bellevue, which is just to the south of Omaha. What we know from local TV reports is that, according to his landlady, he apparently had recently lost his job at a McDonald's franchise and was quite down in the dumps about that, and that he had left a note behind and that he had what was described as an assault rifle, which he carried with him to the mall in Omaha last night. So we really don't know much more than that. We have no idea of what his motive is, or what possibly could have been going through his head when he carried out this act.
The same question we ask every time, Robert, after something like this: has there been any kind of reaction to suggest that maybe it's time to control guns being accessed by people like this man who clearly had problems?
No, that has not been raised at all. And, you know, the sadness of all of this is that it is a relatively common occurrence. We had an incident earlier this year in Wisconsin where 6 people were killed by an off-duty police deputy. And then, of course, we had the Virginia Tech incident in April when 32 people were killed by Cho Sheng Hui, who also took his own life. And the wider question of gun ownership, of course, is still very much a taboo subject, at least in the political level, with, you know, in the current selection process for next year's presidential elections, no candidate is brave enough to put their neck forward and possibly call for tighter gun controls.
Robert Short, the time is 11 minutes to 8. Time for the main business news. Let's go back to the Mansion House and Christopher McKevitt.
Thanks, Cathal, and indeed welcome back to the round room of the Mansion House in Dublin, where one of a number of post-budget business breakfasts is underway around the capital, this one hosted by KPMG. We'll be getting coalface business reaction to Brian Cowan's numbers in a moment, but first we're going to go to AIB's trading update issued to the markets in the last hour. Is it a trading update that will reassure the markets? We're joined by Robbie Kelleher of Davy Stockbrokers. Robbie, what's AIB had to tell us this morning?
Well, I think it's very encouraging. What they're saying is that they're going to still grow profits this year by 13%, even though they're taking write-downs of about 160 million on some of the assets they hold on their balance sheet because of the turmoil they've had in the credit markets. And they're just prudent accounting adjustments. But even allowing for that, they're going to grow profits by 13%. They're saying their business is very strong across all sections and all divisions. And very importantly, they're saying that there's no sign of any deterioration in asset quality, i.e. there's no sign that bad debts are appearing in energy quantity whatsoever. I think it builds on the results from Anglo-Irish Bank last week and shows that whatever markets are saying, what Irish corporates are saying, is that their current experience is very positive. And we've been making the point for quite some time now that there is this huge disconnect between the actual experience of Irish companies, particularly the banks, and what markets are saying is going to happen to them. And hopefully this will do something to close that disconnect.
As you say, you mentioned Anglo-Irish Bank's results last week. The market got a considerable lift on the back of those results, and yet that dissipated towards the end of last week and earlier this week. How do reinvesters be reassured that these results can lift the market and that lift will be sustained?
Well, I think we have some trading statement out from Royal Bank of Scotland this morning as well in the UK, which is saying pretty much the same thing as AIB is saying. We had a good result in New York last night, so I'd be very surprised if the markets don't build on those gains today. But I think there isn't an easy solution to this problem. We're just going to have to get the 2007 results from the Irish corporate sector, you know, and that will come in February or March of next year. And at that stage, they'll have better visibility on their 2008 outlook. And I think when they have that visibility into 2008 outlook, yes, it's going to be a tougher year than 2007, but it's not going to be anything like the disaster that's effectively priced into equity markets at the moment.
Robbie Kelleher, thanks for joining us this morning. We're going to go now to the coalface of business for reaction to Brian Cowan's budget. We're joined by some business people here at the Mansion House, among them Lorcan Murta, Financial Director of Novell Software in South Dublin. Lorcan, AIB this morning talking about head headwinds in the financial sector. Are you happy that there are no headwinds in the business sector arising out of what Brian Cowan has had to say yesterday?
I don't think there are any headwinds arising out of the budget. There were no real surprises in the budget, not an awful lot for business. And that goes down well with international companies. We don't like to be going back to headquarters with unexpected surprises. There were a few things we'd like to have seen. We would have liked to have seen the reinstatement of the PRSI ceiling. Probably not totally surprised it didn't happen. We would like to also see him focusing on providing some incentives towards attracting foreign professional people into Ireland.
And that's a particular issue for your company?
That would be a particular issue for our company. We've had three investments in Ireland in the last year, and it has been crucial that we can attract both qualified Irish employees and foreign employees. 45% of our workforce in Ireland are non-nationals. So we've got to make sure that there's an infrastructure in place for them, and it's good to see the commitment to the infrastructure. They need housing. Most of those, if not all of them, are probably renting. So I think, as he said, on the stamp duty, it doesn't solve all of the problems. So still some work to be done there as we go through the finance bill and, I guess, the rest of the year, some more opportunities.
Let's go over to Anne Herity, who's chief executive of a recruitment firm, CPL. Anne, is this budget going to make it easier for Irish companies to recruit people?
I think there were some interesting things in the budget for Irish companies. I think particularly picking up on, I was particularly pleased to see that the Minister is committed to the implementation of the National Development Plan and to increasing spending under that plan. I think, as Lorcan was saying, it's very important for companies to be able to attract skilled people into Ireland. And when they come here, they need a good quality of life and a good environment. So the spending under the National Development Plan should certainly help us around better airport, better roads infrastructure, better schools. So I think that was certainly very welcome. I was also pleased to see that the Minister is listening to small business in particular, and that he's taken away some of the red tape for small businesses, particularly around the expansion on the of the VAT rates, and also around tax credits, the R&D tax credits. I think that should be particularly good for small businesses and help them to expand and, again, stimulate employment within that environment.
We're also joined by Jim Cleary again from KPMG. That R&D issue, that's something that business has been looking for quite some time, an improvement on the tax credits that you can gain, if you like, if your company invests in R&D. Has the move there been significant enough?
Well, the move is in the right direction. Industry has been looking to make the thing more simple, basically zero-based, and have all R&D spend qualify for extra allowances. That'll help. They could do more, Minister could do more, but look, it's in the right direction. Business should be happy enough that he's listening.
I suppose the problem for the Minister is what exactly constitutes R&D. How do you define it?
Yeah, he nearly has that figured out at this stage. But, you know, we're trying to move up the knowledge economy. We're trying to add value in Ireland compared to manufacturing, you know, abroad and in the East. So we've got to support R&D, and this is a bit of the way towards it. There'll be more. I'm sure there'll be more next year.
Anne Herity, thumbs up for the Minister then, or thumbs down overall?
I think thumbs up overall.
And Lorcan?
I would say thumbs up overall.
Okay, from the Mansion House, joined obviously by Anne Herity and Lorcan Murtagh, and also Robbie Kelleher of Davy Stockbrokers. Back to you in studio. Thank you for joining us here.
Thank you for Christopher. 5 minutes to 8, time for the weather forecast from Emily Gleeson of Met Éireann. Good morning, Emily.
Thank you, Richard. Good morning from Met Éireann. There will be widespread rain today, and it will be heavy in many areas. However, it will ease off in Ulster, North Connacht and North Leinster for a time, but it will persist further south, including the Greater Dublin area, and spread to all areas again during the afternoon. It will be windy, with very strong and gusty west to southwest winds. The gusts will be severe at times this afternoon, especially in parts of Munster and South Leinster. A clearance to showers will follow from the northwest tonight, but it will remain windy and turn rather cold, with lowest temperatures between 3 and 7 degrees. It will be cold and very windy again tomorrow, with widespread showers of rain, hail or sleet. Highest temperatures will range 5 to 8 degrees. Looking ahead to the next few days, there will be further heavy rain on Saturday, followed by scattered showers. Persistent and heavy rain is expected in the east and southeast on Sunday, with showers elsewhere. It will remain windy for the weekend, and it will be cold again by Sunday. At this stage, it looks like there will be a few showers on Monday, but the winds will be much lighter. It will still be fairly unsettled for the early days of next week, but it will be mild for this time of the year. That's all from Met Éireann. Good morning.
And still to come on Morning Ireland in the next hour, the fallout from the budget. We'll be hearing about the reaction of those actors in the property market. Also political reaction from opposition parties and indeed from the Green perspective. We'll be hearing from the Minister, Micheál Martin, and also from Fine Gael's Leo Varadkar. Also, on the day that Aer Lingus increases baggage charges by 50%, we'll hear that Irish Airlines are number one in Europe, number one for complaints.
Interesting idea the Examiner has this morning to look at the way the budget affects not ordinary people, but the people who brought it to you, the members of the government, and to look just at the Taoiseach, for example, on a salary of £310,000, €310,000, according to the Examiner's calculations, the gain for Bertie Ahern from this budget, from the measures announced yesterday, is €434. The same for Mary Harney, although the assessment obviously is different there. Brian Callan and John Gormley, two other examples they give, who both benefit from slightly increased rates of child benefit. And the gain for Brian Callan and for John Gormley and other members of the Cabinet is €802. More on the budget to come, as Richard was saying, in the next hour. Now it's 8 o'clock, you're listening to Morning Ireland, and with Cathal McCullough and Richard Downes.
The news headlines: the reform of stamp duty has been given a broad welcome by the financial and property sectors. It's reported that the young man who shot dead 8 people at a shopping centre in the United States had recently lost his job at a McDonald's restaurant. And a report suggests that Irish Airlines are the most complained about in Europe. The news in full now from Brian Jennings.
There's been a strong welcome to a significant overhaul in the stamp duty regime announced in the budget. Banks, the construction industry and estate agents reacted positively to the reforms. However, the ESRI said it was opposed to cutting stamp duty to help construction. Our business correspondent, David Murphy.
Few argued stamp duty was an aggressive tax in need of some reform. When buyers reached a threshold, they would pay the higher rate on the entire purchase price of a home. Now the tax will be tiered and purchasers will pay less. On a €400,000 home, the reduction will be €10,750. The Construction Industry Federation said the measures should reactivate the sector. Estate agent Douglas Newman Good said the reforms would go some way to restore buyer confidence. Bank of Ireland and National Irish Bank welcomed the move. The Irish Auctioneers and Valuers Institute said the 9% rate would continue to apply to most commercial transactions. That, it said, was a missed opportunity to stem the flow of commercial investment out of Ireland. The independent think tank, the ESRI, said the cuts in stamp duty to stimulate construction were a bad idea. It said the property industry had been slowing to more sustainable levels after a decade of escalating prices.
Last night, the government won the first vote of budget night by 84-71. The vote was on a move to reduce duty on credit, debit and ATM cards and to increase the duty on cheques. Earlier, an increase of 30 cent on a pack of 20 cigarettes was passed unopposed. Ireland's first carbon budget will be presented to the Dáil today by the Minister for the Environment, John Gormley. It's understood the Green Party leader will outline the latest figures on our greenhouse gas emissions and explain how motor tax reforms will apply to new car purchases from July. Our environment correspondent, Paul Cunningham.
The carbon budget is, according to the coalition, a new innovation aimed at putting climate change at the heart of government decision-making, particularly the financial cycle. It's expected it will identify just how much carbon dioxide the country is producing, from which sectors, and what measures can be employed to bring emissions down. RTE News understands draft figures for 2006 will show a small reduction in emissions, but Ireland will still be close to 25% above 1990 levels rather than 13% specified by the Kyoto Protocol. In yesterday's budget, Finance Minister Brian Cowan said motor tax for existing cars will increase by 9.5% for up to 2.5-litre engines and by 11% for those above that. Minister Gormley is expected to announce that new cars from July 1st will encounter a staggered motor tax which is solely based on emissions, a further bid to incentivise people to go green. The government's stated aim is to reduce Ireland's emissions by 3% each year. Opposition parties will be keen to see how Minister Gormley identifies that extremely ambitious target will be achieved.
The Bank of England is coming under pressure to cut interest rates amid increasing evidence of an economic slowdown in the UK. The bank's Monetary Policy Committee, which will announce its decision at midday, could cut rates by 0.25% to 5.5% to help slow a drop in both house prices and in consumer confidence. In the United States, a 19-year-old man has shot dead 8 people at a shopping centre in Nebraska. The gunman then turned the rifle on himself. 5 other people were wounded, 2 of them critically, in the attack at the Westroads Mall in Omaha. Most of the victims were shot inside a department store near the children's clothing area. It's understood they'd been Christmas shopping at the time. A note was later found at the home of the gunman's mother. Our correspondent Robert Short.
The man who carried out yesterday's shooting was identified as 19-year-old Robert Hawkins. He lived in a city close to Omaha. Last night, a woman identified as Hawkins' landlady by local and national media said she believed the young man had been upset at losing his job at a local McDonald's franchise. A statement issued by the fast food chain said it was cooperating with the ongoing police investigation. Police have not speculated as to what Hawkins' motive may have been. Hawkins carried out the shootings with what's described as an assault rifle. His victims were 5 women and 3 men. 2 of those injured are still in a critical condition. Robert Short, RTE News.
A report from the European Consumer Centre has found that Irish airlines are the most complained about in Europe. The report, which is being launched in Brussels today, reveals that Irish airlines are responsible for almost a quarter of all complaints by airline passengers. Paul Colgan reports.
For the second year running, Irish Airlines are the most complained about in Europe, according to the report by the ECC. It also found that Irish passengers made more complaints against airlines in 2007 than any other nationality in Europe. This is an increase on the previous year, when Irish people came 7th on the list. The main issues for airline passengers were in relation to lost luggage, cancelled flights and delays. The ECC said the report proves that existing passenger rights legislation is too vague and is not being properly enforced. ECC Ireland Director Tina Leonard said the report proved that not much had changed during the last year, but she was hopeful that 2008 would be different.
A man in his 20s has been charged in connection with the theft of 450 kegs from the Guinness Brewery in Dublin last week. He's to appear at Kilmainham District Court in 2 weeks' time. A second man arrested on Tuesday has been released and a file is being prepared for the Director of Public Prosecutions. A trailer carrying €64,000 worth of beer and stout was stolen from the factory depot on Victoria Quay. Gardaí say some of the property was recovered during a search in County Meath on Monday. Talks in the Bus Éireann school bus dispute will resume later today. The Labour Relations Commission is to contact SIPTU negotiators and company representatives this morning. The dispute centres on pay and conditions for part-time drivers. SIPTU drivers are seeking pay parity with full-time drivers and access to benefits such as sick pay, holiday pay, overtime rates and the occupational pension scheme. Industrial action deferred last week is likely to go ahead tomorrow if no resolution is found. A young boy died after he was hit by a car outside Newton Ards in County Down. The accident happened on the main Belfast to Newton Ards dual carriageway yesterday evening. It's believed the boy was aged 12. There was no winner of the midweek lotto jackpot worth more than €6.5 million. The numbers drawn were 5, 22, 24, 29, 34 and 38. The bonus number was 39. Now the time is going up to 7:08.
RTE Radio 1 weather with Dimplex Home Heating. Make your house a home with energy-efficient heating from Dimplex.
Widespread rain heavy in many areas. The rain will ease off in northern areas for a time today, but will persist in the south and spread to all parts again during the afternoon. Very windy with highest temperatures 12 to 14 degrees. And there's a warning that west to southwest winds will reach gale or strong gale force today on all coastal waters and on the Irish Sea. Now with news of traffic and travel, here's Nicola Hudson of AA Roadwatch.
Thank you, and caution is advised on all routes around the country as stormy weather has left surface water and debris on many routes. However, we're told that in Cork, the Mill Street to Ballydaly Road is now clear. In Cork City, a crash outside the Rochestown Park Hotel on the South Ring Road is blocking one lane inbound and traffic is tailing back as far as the Jack Lynch Tunnel. As expected, wet weather has delayed all commuter routes into Dublin. The M4 Lucan Road has backed up to the Junction 2A Selbridge on the M4. There's long delays on the Nanga Road from Clondalkin Village to the Naas Road. The Naas Nace Road itself has backed up as far as City West, while the N81 is very heavy inbound from Jobstown. Taking the M50 southbound, it's very slow moving from junctions 4 to 7, that's Ballymun to Lucan, and we have reports coming in of a breakdown at junction 9 for the Red Cow, which is now adding to delays. Today's ferry sailings to Holyhead have been cancelled on the Stena Line HSS service and also on the Irish Ferries Jonathan Swift service. Meanwhile, in County Waterford, approaching the city from the Kilkenny side, we have roadworks there continuing at Mullinabroe Bridge. We know that between New Ra and Granny, and we have reports that traffic lights there are out of sync. Also, a bridge lift is scheduled for 9:45 this morning, which will add to delays coming in on the Ferrybank dual carriageway. Then a note for any drivers on the Dublin to Carlow route today at 8 a.m. Roadworks are getting underway at Castle Dermot, and delays are likely right through until 5:30 this evening. Similarly, on the Dublin to Limerick road, the N7 emergency works are underway at Mount Rath until 2 p.m. this afternoon. Nicola Hudson, AA Roadwatch.
Thank you, Nicola. Just after 8:09, time for It Says in the Papers again from Paddy Clancy.
A mixed reaction to the budget, but mainly favourable. Although Harry McGee in the Irish Examiner says that Brian Cowan made an astonishing reverse on stamp duty, the centrepiece of the budget, and that has left him exposed to charges of political hypocrisy. The Irish Times believes it was a budget for this time. The boom is over, the pace of economic growth is slipping, it editorialises. Budgeting in a boom is easy work. Budgeting in tougher times is a much more demanding business. Mr. Cowan's overarching concern was to strengthen confidence in the economy's future performance. On the credit side, he performed the basic budgetary tasks well. On the debit side, the restructuring of stamp duties could be both ill-timed and ill-judged. Cowan's Big Houdini Act, Blair's the main headline in the Irish Daily Mail above Chief Political Correspondent John Lee's story that the Finance Minister performed a budgetary conjuring trick worthy of Houdini himself by borrowing money for what Lee calls the stamp duty giveaway and increases in infrastructure and welfare spending. The Finance Minister avoided the predicted tax attack on middle and high earners. The Irish Independent refers to Canny Cowan and editorialises that the budget was designed to maintain and build confidence. It also records in its main news report that apart from what it calls major stamp changes, the only other major change in an otherwise cautious budget was a complete overhaul of the car taxation system. The Irish Sun calls Mr. Cowan Robin Hood because, the paper says, he took a little from the rich to give to the poor. The plight of Katie French continues to occupy much space, and The Independent has discovered that she wasn't taken ill at a house in Ashbourne, as all papers have been reporting, but some distance away in the tiny village of Kilmessan, and that she was not at a party but was simply a visitor to the house. Tom Brady and Anne-Marie Walsh report Gardaí is saying they have no concrete evidence to indicate that anything untoward took place in the hours prior to her illness. The tabloids insist she was taken ill at a party in Ashbourne, and the Irish Daily Mirror carries a grainy picture of a male friend who, reporter Paul Martin writes, was one of the pals who tried to help Ms. French. The man told the Mirror he helped her but refused to say any more. Other stories now, and the Irish Daily Star claims an exclusive with its report that Joe O'Reilly, who murdered his wife, plays in goal on a soccer team in prison. Enda Kenny told the Doyle that second-level students can buy ecstasy tablets for as little as €2.50, and that's in most papers. The Mirror gives prominence to Mr. Kenny's call for voluntary drug testing in schools to stop what he called the infestation of drugs. Also in most papers, 9 years for a 27-year-old man for imprisoning and violently sexually assaulting a 6-year-old girl. The Independent gives prominence to the detail that the judge had considered giving him life. And the secret of a long life, a glass of sherry and 20 cigarettes a day. That's the Mirror headline above a report on 105-year-old Kathleen Murray, who delighted her family with a few dance steps at her recent birthday at the Sacred Heart Hospital in Roscommon. Liam Neeson says he got the acting bug after creeping as a 13-year-old into the back of Ian Paisley's Free Presbyterian Church in Ballymena and witnessing his Bible-thumping performances. It was acting, but also great acting and stirring too, Neeson is quoted in The Independent. And the effect the new Cork School of Music had on Times reader Ursula Hoff Gormley is described in her letter to the editor. It must be the finest new building in Ireland, she writes, and adds that the facilities for music and drama left her reeling.
Paddy Clancy with It Says in the Papers. The time now, 13 minutes past 8.
Now we're going to talk about the budget, politically and economically. Politically first, we're joined by Fine Gael frontbencher Leo Varadkar, and we hope to be joined in the next couple of minutes by the Minister for Enterprise, Trade and Employment, Micheál Martin. But Leo Varadkar, good morning. Thanks for coming in. Can we focus on the one issue which is mentioned in all of the headlines in the papers that put the budget on the front page, which is by no means all of them, but the broadsheets, and that's the issue of stamp duty. And broadly, is Fine Gael's reaction to this, what the Minister has done is too late, but it's basically the right thing?
Well, first of all, we do welcome the changes in stamp duty. You know, this is something we campaigned for before the election, during the election and after the election. And Brian Cairn had three opportunities to do this, and we gave him three opportunities to do it, and he said no on each occasion. So we do welcome it, but it is a bit too late. I think people are very, very naive. They think it's going to have a huge impact on the property market. There's a couple of people waiting to close their deals, and I think it'll clear some people out of the market in that sense, but it's not going to, you know, cause construction to increase. And as most people know, no first-time buyers pay stamp duty in any case, and most new construction is for first-time buyers. But what it does show, though, it does show that really the Brian Cairn is more of a tin man than an iron chancellor.
Yeah, before we get on to that, in fact, let's not get on to that kind of terminology at all if we can. But it won't kill anybody to wait for a minister to just take it easy, see how the property market is going, and then move the way he has.
I think what he essentially tried to do really is a neutral budget, but that's not what we need now. We actually need, you know, a budget that makes decisions, and particularly the thing is of much more significance than stamp duty, which, you know, only.
Yeah, no, I'm just saying, on stamp duty, there are good reasons for not rushing in to the property market. I mean, you can spend a lot of money to no effect. The minister has waited.
He has made the change now. You know, he's not going to be in position to make any further changes to stamp duty, and, you know, in my view, those changes should have been made a long time ago, not just for property market reasons, but also because stamp duty was a very unfair tax, and the way it was levied was very unfair. And, you know, our support for stamp duty reform was because it would have made an unfair tax fair.
All right. Now, can I just turn to the budget generally? And you've pointed in particular. Well, in fact, park that for a moment, because we've just been joined by the Minister for Enterprise, Trade and Employment, Micheál Martin. Traffic.
Your timing was a bit early for me. The sense that I was told it was here a bit later, but there was some mix up.
It was a misunderstanding. I'm sorry about that. Yeah. Anyway, so we were just talking about the issue of stamp duty, on which basically I think Fine Gael are saying, Leo Varadkar is making the point that this should have happened earlier, although they support what you've done.
No, I think it's the right time to implement this particular change. I think Brian Cairn has been very strong on this from the very outset. I mean, the correct mechanism and vehicle to effect market-sensitive reforms such as this is within the budgetary cycle and at budget time. And clearly there's been a significant change within the market. There was no point in throwing petrol under fire 12 or 15 months ago. And we all know there had to be a certain adjustment to the construction market. But that was inevitable, and that was accepted by all commentators. And I think what he's done yesterday, I think, is to simplify and effect a fairly radical change in stamp duty, which will, combined with the mortgage interest relief for first-time buyers and the significant investment in social housing and affordable housing that's contained in the budget, will, I think, give a timely fillip to the construction sector on the residential side that will be useful in the coming months.
Can I
and
ask
year.
Each of you this concern, about which I presume there's no certainty, but it's a real issue. The government, this is going to cost the government over 200 million. In tax forgone. How sure can both of you be that this just won't be swallowed up by the market and not really benefit anyone?
Well, we can't be sure, and I think it's interesting for the Minister to say that the correct time to bring about stamp duty reform is during the budgetary cycle. This is the second stamp duty reform in less than 6 months. If the correct time is to reform stamp duty is at budget time, then why did we have a half-baked stamp duty reform a few months ago? And let's be clear that what's going to change the construction market is not changes in stamp duty. What's going to change the market is what we see in the front page of the Irish Times property supplement today, which is developers dropping new apartment prices by €100,000. You know, it's that correction that's going to change the property market, not changes in stamp duty.
Unfortunately, we had a general election last year, and I think it's very clear that Brian Cairn had no appetite for the kind of auction politics that was engaged in prior to the election for about 12 months on the issue of stamp duty. And Brian Cairn was very clear that in terms of signals to the market and certainty, you know, an election campaign in itself, it was unfortunate in our opinion, that it became a sort of a dominant issue in the context of, you know, in terms of who's going to
do
the greatest.
And
the point I'm making is, Leo has clearly, from the Sunday papers, that he'll bend over.
I didn't interrupt you, Leo, and you clearly articulated the position that Brian Cohen articulated in advance of the budget, that the stamp duty in itself isn't the holy grail of activity within the construction sector. He's been saying that consistently. We're not making any huge claims in relation to this particular reform, other than that it will provide a fillip, and it's timely to do so. There are other more fundamental market issues pertaining to the residential property market in terms of demand and so forth, and we'll allow the market to take its cue in relation to that. But I think broadly speaking, this is a reforming budget in a number of ways, and it's one that fundamentally does the right thing in terms of the economy at this stage, i.e., you know, reining in current public expenditure to a realistic 8.2%. And critically then, not reining in the capital side and investing very significantly in key areas that will enable us and position the economy for sustainable growth into the future, such as education, research and development, physical infrastructure, and indeed communications infrastructure and energy.
Leo Varadkar, you've pointed in particular to some stealth taxes, which are, I'd imagine, going to be sensitive for the government. What are you thinking of, and how, I mean, something has to go up somewhere.
Well, one thing that has gone up somewhere is borrowing, and the suggestion that this is a reforming budget is ridiculous. There's going to be $4 billion more in borrowing than had been anticipated, and $3 billion of those are going to be for current spending. We're going to have an 8.2% increase in day-to-day spending. I'm not talking about capital spending, I'm not talking about investment infrastructure, I'm talking an 8.2% increase in day-to-day spending. And we all know that because of the failure to reform the public service, we're going to see no real improvement in public services. In any other country, an increase in public spending of 8.6% would bring about real changes. And what's interesting, if you break down the figures, for example, if you look at the pay and salary increases that are there, HSE 6%, Defence 6%, and secondary school teachers 5%, that obviously doesn't make provision for benchmarking pay increases. And I wonder, are there going to be benchmarking pay increases at all? Because if you take secondary schools, for example, a 5% increase in pay and salaries for secondary schools, that's barely going to provide for the additional teachers in new schools and constituencies like mine, let alone pay increases. One thing I think is very important as well to point out is that it's probably likely that by the end of the year, most people actually be worse off as a consequence of this budget. If you look at the government's own figures, they're talking about, because of the income tax changes, people will be between 2 and 20 euros better off per week. But if you factor into that 10% increases in motor tax, 10% increases in hospital A&E charges, doubling of excise duty on checks, and increases in the cost of medicine, the reality is that most people will be worse off by the end of the year. Yeah. And not to mention the fact that the government has once again, in their third term, has yet again broken their commitment in relation to people paying at the higher rate of income tax. 750,000 people now pay the higher rate of income tax.
That we won't be worse off.
Earning 30 more euros than the average wage are paying the higher rate.
Can you reassure us that we won't be worse off in a year's time?
All, let's deal with the public expenditure.
Well, can you just answer the question?
8.2%.
By all means, we've just heard a charge that we're going to be worse off in a year's time. Now, can you reassure us that we won't?
I will certainly deal with that, but you didn't interrupt Leo once.
And he was there for a long time. I'm asking you a question.
You certainly are.
I'm asking you a question and you don't want to answer it.
I will answer it.
Well, please do.
But please don't be interrupting me in that manner. Leo had a full range there, and it's happening on regular occasions. I'm simply saying to you, he's wrong. And Brian Cohen yesterday in the budget, and it's contained in the budget statement, that people will be better off across a whole range of incomes because of the taxation changes, the social welfare changes, the child allowance improvements, and right across the board. But the idea that current public expenditure is all wasted is wrong, and that's the point I wanted to tackle. Half of all of yesterday's current expenditure growth is in social welfare. It's accounted for as social welfare. Where does Leo want us to cut that? 80% of all current expenditure is in education, health and social welfare. Does he want us to cut teachers? Does he want us to cut nurses? Does he want us to cut doctors? Because that's the reality behind his rhetoric. And he keeps lambasting the public sector as he did the other night in the private members within the Dáil. And I think we need a more realistic and concrete debate on this specific issue. I think within the difficult budgetary framework that we are in, the minister has prioritised expenditure on the vulnerable sector of the economy in terms of social welfare and in terms of pensioners. I mean, in terms of a contributory pensioner, for example, with a person with a qualified adult allowance, you're looking at a 41 euro increase. That is substantial by any standard in a more difficult climate than we've previously been. And I think, you know, when I just give you that figure again, 80% of all current expenditure, health, education and social welfare. And to suggest that he could trim that even more, as Leo is implicitly suggesting, I think is going a bit too far. And I think we need more concrete examples of where that could be trimmed in terms of personnel.
I'll put that point to Leo Varadkar in a moment. Can I just re-ask that question I put to you at the beginning? Are you saying contrary to what Leo Varadkar has alleged, that we won't be worse off in a year's time when you put it all together.
Yes, we're saying you'll be better off and that people will be better off as a result of the
budget. All right, now Leo Varadkar, can you deal with the Minister's point? He's asking you, what would you cut?
Yeah, well,
what would you not spend?
It's very clear what we would do. What we would do is follow the approach of Gordon Brown, that what Gordon Brown did in the UK in terms of public sector reform. And what he did is bring in a 3% efficiency target, and every government body and every government department had to deliver 3% efficiency per year. In an Irish context, that would save about 3 billion. And again, using the UK example, what they managed to do in 2 or 3 years is cut administrative staff by 16% and move them to the front line. That's the kind of thing we should be doing. What they're doing in their budget, the whole new system of doing a budget, is you work out how much you spent last year, then you work out how much it would cost you to do the exact same thing last year, and then you do the add-on.
So you're saying the government could have saved 3 billion and didn't?
And not in 1 year, but over 2 or 3 years that they could have. Through efficiencies they could have. Like, any other country in the world to increase public spending by 8.2% is massive. It would not be acceptable. And I just want to...
Just
address the social welfare increases.
I think
it's pretty rich for a minister who's given himself a pay increase of 700 euros a week to be telling pensioners that they should be grateful for the 14.
I want to deal with that point. Minister, how do you deal with Leo Varadkar's... he says we can save over time 3 billion euro.
Well, first of all, he needs to be far more specific than just generic sort of catch-all cries of we can save 3% here or 3 billion. The bottom line is the Minister for Cohen yesterday, for example, in the detail of the budget speech and in his communication to all ministers, has indicated a significant review of public expenditure in the context of efficiencies. There's a range of value for money audits that are ongoing across all departments and specific programmes, which have been there for quite a long number of years in specific areas. And of course, he's also put in efficiency targets within the estimates allocations to each department, and has asked departments to affect such efficiencies, but they're nowhere in the context of 3 billion, because the fundamental overall cost in public sector expenditure is pay. That accounts for the overwhelming percentage of public expenditure increases. I would know this as a government minister from time to time. When you take the pay element out of the public sector, the non-pay element is quite small. So in the end of the day, if you want to tackle and reduce public expenditure by the order that Leo has suggested, 3 billion, you're going to have to hit pay, and you're going to have to hit the numbers employed in the public sector. Now, I think we need more specific examples from Leo as to where he thinks the axe should fall in terms of the numbers employed in the public sector and the pay issue.
I can give one example, if you like, which is the HSE, a body established partially as part of your work as a health minister. And in any private sector business in any other country, if you merged 7 or 8 health boards together, you would have had a significant reduction in staff. For example, when the Coca-Cola plant merges here, we had reductions in staff. What you managed to do in your government, which is quite extraordinary, is to merge 7 or 8 bodies into one and not deliver any reduction in the number of staff.
No, again, if you go through the HSE and go through the health service...
How many redundancies were there?
If you go through the health service, for example...
7,
we've been increasing... the numbers of nurses, doctors, therapists across the board. The actual ratio between administration staff and indeed the clinical frontline people is not to the degree that you were suggesting. In other words, there could be efficiencies in terms of the administrative side of it. But again, that's masking the reality.
That is masking the reality.
In terms of the overall preponderance of the vote in health and where that money is going. And I would know it in quite some detail. And again, you have this sort of simplistic articulation around the health issue about it's all administration and not the other. That's not true. Well, no, but people do. And I think it leads to an ill-informed view, in my opinion, about the realities on the ground in terms of health expenditure.
A final point, Minister, about medical cards, about which a lot was promised by Fianna Fáil in the manifesto in the programme for government. And yet it appears that in this budget, the poor can wait. We'll deal with it later.
Well, there's been significant progress in medical card eligibility over the last 2 years in the context of our commitments in terms of the programme for government. We are committed to specific targets in relation to children and income thresholds in terms of families with both children and children with disability. Now, the Minister for Health herself is undertaking a significant review on eligibility thresholds for medical cards, and it's that in that context that we will be bringing out further improvements to medical card eligibility and access.
In relation to housing, I just have to ask each of you, and that the point was made by David McWilliams earlier on, I don't know if you heard him, he called what happened a coup by property interests. Behind that, I think, could be the issue of social housing for people who can't afford the kind of bingo money that's going that are charged in the housing markets. What would either what? First of all, Minister, what is social housing actually going to increase next year?
Yes, indeed, and he's providing additional capital for social housing. I mean, his whole housing package is about 1.7 billion. And then if you take non-exchequer financing, you're bringing it over onto about 2.5 billion. So he's increasing the numbers of social housing. I think he's talking about 9,000 new social housing units to be commenced or acquired in 2008 and a further 5,500 new affordable homes. So they're significant. And then the rental accommodation scheme and support for homeless services will also be assisted. So he's looking to try and assist about 20,000 households in 2008 in relation to the social affordable housing side of the equation.
That sounds on the face of it, Leo Varadkar, as if there's action on several fronts.
I think David McWilliam's comments were very interesting, because the term 9,000 social houses to be commenced or acquired is quite worrying to me, because it suggests to me that the government may intend to actually acquire some of the units that developers can't sell. Effectively, what the government is going to do is intervene in the housing market to purchase privately built housing in order to subsidise it and to give a false boost, if you like, to the housing market. I'm very, very worried about that, and I'd like to know if that's going to be the case. What we would do, for a start, we'd implement Part 5 properly, delivering 20% of social and affordable housing in all new developments in those developments, not 3 years down the line, 3 miles away. And what we would do for first-time buyers is bring about an SSIA-type system, whereby first-time buyers over a number of years could pay into a savings account and build up a deposit in that way. But, you know, there is a correction underway here, and whether we like it or not, and people may not want to hear this, you know, house prices are going to go down. They're going to go down by between 15% and 20% in areas where they haven't already. And I think the government should be very, very careful about going into the housing market with borrowed money, and it is borrowed money, to buy up houses that developers can't sell. That's a very, very foolish thing to do, because all you're doing is postponing the inevitable.
Briefly, Minister, response.
Well, I'm surprised, because for the last 4 years, local authorities have been buying houses in private sector.
Not to that extent.
Well, they have.
I know what's going on in Cork.
They've been buying private houses for quite a long time. That's one mechanism. That's one mechanism they have been utilising, along with building social housing and along with the affordable housing side and the rental accommodation scheme. So, and the reason for that, by the way, is to avoid what we did in the 70s and 80s, which was build large ghettos, which reinforced, in many instances, disadvantage and so
we'll
on. So
to,
I think we have a much more sophisticated model now.
There is a lot more fine print in the budget, which we'll have time to talk about in the days ahead. But now at 8:32, our thanks to Micheál Martin, the Minister, and to Leo Varadkar, his opposition shadow from Fine Gael, for coming in. Time for a summary of the news from Brian.
Thank you, Cathal. There's been a strong welcome for a significant overhaul in the stamp duty regime announced in the budget. Banks, the construction industry and estate agents reacted positively to the reforms. However, the ESRI said it was opposed to cutting stamp duty to help construction. Ireland's first carbon budget will be presented to the Dáil today by the Minister for the Environment, John Gormley. It's understood the Green Party leader will outline the latest figures on our greenhouse gas emissions and explain how motor tax reforms will apply to new car purchases from July. In the United States, a 19-year-old man has shot dead 8 people at a shopping centre in Nebraska. The gunman then turned the rifle on himself. 5 other people were wounded in the attack. This woman was at the West Roads Mall in Omaha.
All you could hear was the shots, and I said, we gotta go. And I stood up, I said, let's go this way, and I went around and I looked back, and then I saw the guy in the children's department.
There was no winner of the midweek lotto jackpot worth more than €6.5 million. The numbers drawn were 5, 22, 24, 29, 34 and 38. The bonus number was 39. Now the weather, widespread rain, heavy in many areas. The rain will ease off in northern areas for a time today, but will persist in the south and spread to all parts again during the afternoon. Very windy with highest temperatures 12 to 14 degrees. And there's a warning that west to southwest winds will reach gale or strong gale force today on all coastal waters and on the Irish Sea. Now with news of traffic and travel, here's Nicola Hudson of AE Roadwatch.
Thank you. And a travel update first, with a reminder that Irish Ferries Jonathan Swift sailings on the Dublin to Holyhead route have been cancelled. However, all Stena Line sailings are operating as scheduled. In Cork, Gardaí are still dealing with a collision outside of the Rochestown Park Hotel on the South Ring Road, and one lane remains blocked with traffic delays back as far as the Jack Lynch Tunnel. Today on the Dublin Carlow route, delays are likely as roadworks are now underway at Castle Dermot until 5:30 this evening. Commuter traffic into Dublin remains extremely heavy on all routes. One of the worst is the N4 Lucan Road, back up to at least Junction 2A at Selbridge, and we have reports there of a 55-minute journey time as far as the M50. Also reports coming in of a breakdown on the N3 Navan Road inbound by the Blanchardstown Shopping Centre, and both the Green Hills Road and the N81 and the Nace Road are all extremely heavy this morning as well. Nicola Hudson, AA Roadwatch.
24 minutes to 9, you're listening to Morning Ireland. Michael Corcoran is back with the sport.
Richard, thanks. In soccer, Arsenal 4 points clear at the top of the Premier League after that 1-1 draw with Newcastle United last night. The draw easing quite a lot of the pressure on the Newcastle manager, Sam Allardyce. Everton through to the knockout stages of the UEFA Cup as Group A winners after a 1-0 win over Zenit St. Petersburg. Tim Cahill scoring 5 minutes from time. Spurs and Bolton are in action tonight. In Gaelic games, the Ulster Council of the GAA will meet later on tonight to discuss the player grants issue amid growing opposition to the deal within the province. Over 300 people attended a meeting in Toome last night to rally support against the grants. The meeting agreed to lobby the Ulster Council and Central Council of the GAA to defer the new arrangement. Let's hear a sample of the views from the floor at last night's meeting.
We have a system in the GAA. We go from club, the county, the province, the national. It's a way of doing things, the GAA way of doing things. I'm assuming everybody in this room tonight is a believer in that, because that's why you're here. That's what we want to use to stop pay for play. I have two problems with this thing that was landed on us last Thursday. Firstly, and no matter what system is used, I'd have to say openly and honestly, I'm against it. Pay for play is pay for play. But I think if we continue on the line that we're going to kill the association, because we're going to kill the voluntary element of the association.
But my biggest fear is here that those volunteers are losing their voice. This has been imposed on them from the top down. This is not a motion that was started at the bottom, at the grassroots level. And I think that's where all those motions should be starting from. It's what the membership feel. It's not what the hierarchy at the very top feel it should be happening.
My credentials would be none of that. A very poor reserve player. I have two of the ex-managers here that will certainly confirm those credentials. But I'll tell you, far from an elite player I was, but I'll tell you one thing, it was elite for me. That's what it was about. And I think just as you look through this evening and the ongoing debate, a couple of things for me are absolutes. And I think for all of us in the room, they're absolutes. Pay for play is pay for play, no matter what spin you want to put on it. The second thing,
some very strong views there from some of the people who attended that meeting in Toome last night. The grants issue, one of the items on the agenda at Saturday's Central Council meeting. In golf, play underway on the opening day of the Alfred Dunhill Championship in South Africa. Peter Laurie, not going well for him. He's 5 over par after 12. It's going much better for Stephen Brown, who's level after 11. Darren Clark has yet to tee off there. The early leaders are the South Africans, George Coetzee at 3 under. He's joined also by Andrew McLardy. Yesterday it was confirmed that Ray Houghton would join Don Gibbons and Don Howe to help select and recommend a successor to Steve Staunton as the Republic of Ireland football manager. Quite a lot of interest in the vacant position. That's according to the FAI chief executive, John Delaney.
Well, there's a lot of interest in it, John. And I said, I think I kind of flagged that maybe a month ago, that maybe 2.5 years ago, there wasn't the same interest in the job. I think the financial package we're putting up is a lot stronger this time. But I also think there's a genuine sense that there's a better playing squad available with the established players, of course, like Richard Dunn and Shea Given and Damien Duff, now that he's back from injury, hopefully, and Robbie Keane. But the younger guys who came through during Stephen Staunton's time, like the Kevin Doyles and the Hunts and the McShanes and hopefully Stephen Ireland coming back. So there's a greater sense, I think, that there's a better playing pool available now, and that's created a large amount of interest in the job. As I said, it's for the guys to go about assessing that now and hopefully getting the right man to manage Ireland going forward.
Yeah, I presume you want to get this kind of wrapped up kind of quickly, though, because there is a lot of speculation, and day to day there seems to be a new story coming out about it.
Well, you can't do anything about speculation. I think there's been a lot of inaccuracies over the last month. That's probably something that has been disappointing. I did a Marion Finucane show, I think, the Saturday after Stephen was no longer manager of Ireland, and I made it clear that I felt there would be inaccuracies, a lot of speculation. And it proved to be the point, and I made it clear, you know, that now that I can talk about the process, now that we've handed it over to the three-man committee, I mean, I've never spoken to Terry Venables in my life. There was no arrangement down in South Africa to meet any manager to manage Ireland going forward, Gerard Houllier or anybody else. Andy Townsend, when I met him, we never spoke about him being assistant manager to the Irish team. And there's a whole load of other ones I could go through. And I suppose that's the nature of the world we live in. I don't mind speculation, but the inaccuracy certainly didn't help over the last period. I think there's a lot of clarity about the process as of today's announcement. It's up to the guys to get on with doing the job now.
There seems to be a lot of vehemence, especially from one or two commentators, about Terry Venables perhaps getting the Irish job.
Well, I think everyone has a view on who should manage Ireland. I mean, you don't have to, you know, talk about any individuals. I think if I was chief executive of other sporting organisations, they often say to me, listen, the interest in the Irish job is something they would love to have and love to crave to have, because it shows that people actually care about the appointment. And it is probably one of the biggest appointments in sport in Ireland, no doubt about that. I think there was a survey a couple of years ago where the next biggest appointment to the Taoiseach of this country was the manager of the Irish soccer team. So there's a huge level of interest, and people have strong opinions on who should manage Ireland going forward. I think it's best that guys who are steeped in the game, I'm an administrator, guys who are steeped in the game like Ray Houghton, like Don Howe and Don Givens should be given the opportunity to go now and pick the person to manage the Irish team going forward. And I'm happy that they're going to do it, and I await their outcome over the coming weeks and months as to what they're going to do.
That's the FAI Chief Executive John Delaney chatting to John Kenny there. In rugby, the Leinster team to play Edinburgh in tomorrow night's Heineken Cup game at the RDS will be named at lunchtime today. Brian O'Driscoll is their main injury concern. The New Zealand Rugby Union are expected to announce tomorrow who's going to coach the team going forward. They have had interviews this morning with Robbie Deans, Graham Henry, Colin Cooper and Ian Foster. They are expected to announce the decision overnight. And finally, for now, racing at home today is in Clonmel. The first to six is off at 1:15.
Michael, thanks very much indeed. The time now, 18 minutes 9. We're going back to the budget with our economics editor, George Lee. George, let's look at the big picture on this. You were right, obviously, on property, and well done on that. But overall, Brian Cowan, I suppose, had the option when he came to this budget of doing what Charlie McCreevy did in 2002, which was to really turn off the tap and bring the economy to a grinding halt and cut back the in various departments. He decided not to do that, didn't he?
Well, I'm sure, in fairness to Charlie McCreevy, he'd say he didn't turn off the taps and bring the economy to a halt, but I know exactly what you mean. The conditions 5 years ago were very different to today. In the last 5 years, we've had this boom in employment in construction to such an extent that it's accounted for 60% of all male new jobs. It wasn't like that in the run into the budget 5 years ago. The domestic economy has been much more important in the last 5 years than it was in the previous 5 years. And when you look at the conditions facing the minister this time, he was faced with a situation where domestic confidence was falling quite sharply, and you can see that from consumer confidence surveys. He was faced with a situation where, if you look at the most recent employment figures, only 5% of the 80,000 jobs almost were actually men getting employment positions. The rest of the men were self-employed coming off the building sites. He was faced in a situation where it was appropriate for him to address domestic confidence, and that was why when his big issue there was the stamp duty, to give some kind of fillip, not to cure the property market, but certainly to help things. In relation to the rest of the public finances, there were no cuts, and I think that that's important because it's part of the domestic confidence. When the domestic economy is under the pressure, and the global pressure and the domestic pressure that we have at the moment, if you pile more negativity in relation on top of that, by the government cutting back, as well as the banks cutting back, as well as the interest rates going up, I don't think it's going to do anybody any good. And I think that restoring the confidence or helping to keep the confidence.
So borrowing was okay in that context, even though it sounds like an awful lot of money, billions and billions, but you think it was okay in this context?
Yeah, well, even if you were borrowing for the purposes that they're borrowing for 5 years ago, if they had done it 5 years ago, it still would have been okay, because it's to improve the productive capacity of the economy. I think you have to really look at the different type. There are two sides to the budget. There's the day-to-day running of the government departments. Now, if we were living beyond
our means... We're not borrowing for that.
No, and that would be really bad. And we're actually we've a significant surplus on that. This borrowing, it can make people uncomfortable. In fact, and to be honest, it makes me uncomfortable when you see the national debt going up because of the history of our national debt.
Sure.
But we have to take into account what it's for.
And because it's for capital, you think that's a particularly good idea?
Well, there's 10, 11 billion of a public capital program, and there's money going into the National Pension Reserve Fund. So it isn't being wasted. This money isn't actually going into the back of people's pockets or wallets in relation to pay increases, although he does have problems in relation to that coming down the line. He's going to have to do something to contain the pressures.
George Lee, our economics editor at the time, now 8:45.
Let's go back to the budget changes and stamp duty. Our reporter Katrina Perry visited a desirable estate in South Dublin, which, according to myhome.ie, currently has 11 properties for sale. Now, most of them a year ago would have had the for sale sign quickly replaced by sold.
There's a large park, schools nearby, a medical centre, Chinese takeaway, dry cleaners, pharmacy, convenience store, video shop, easy access to the N11 and M50, plus a great view of the city lights. Yet 3- and 4-bedroom semi-detached houses in this leafy green South Dublin housing estate just aren't selling.
3 months now my house has been on the market. I've reduced my price by €80,000.
Finance Minister Brian Cowan's overhaul of the stamp duty regime is music to the ears of frustrated buyers, sellers and estate agents. Taoiseach Bertie Ahern.
We simplified it, a far more effective system. Instead of the six steps or the six categories that were there, now there's two. Up to a million, it's 7%, and then it's 9% with a disregard for the first 125,000. So I think this is a very good, fair system.
Dunleary-based estate agent Ronan O'Hara of Savills HOK says the new stamp duty system will make a big difference to people's pockets.
Originally, a house at 800,000. Would have attracted stamp duty of 9%. So instead of paying 72,000 in stamp duty, now you're only paying 47,250. It's a saving of 25,000.
And from the people that you've been dealing with who are looking to buy houses in this area, what sort of difference would that figure make to them?
Well, I think, to be honest, it's the difference between being brave enough to make the move versus before, where they just felt there's no way, it's just a bridge too far. I mean, there would be a number of large Southside Dublin housing developments or estates, the Gallops, Watson's, the Park and Cabinteely, just to name a few, where there would be a lot of people wanting to trade up. I think those estates now, you will see movement in them. People being able to afford to move from a 3-bed to a 4-bed.
The Park Estate in Cabinteely is one such location. Mairead Lynn, her husband and children have been trying to trade up to a bigger house since the beginning of the year, but they've been finding it tough.
There was a huge nervousness, definitely, because certainly in the area where we live, like a house here in Cabinteely would have turned around literally in a couple of weeks. The amount of effort now that we would have to go to sell this house is just incredible compared to, say, this time last year. Well, even earlier last year, 2006, January 06. So I think it's just the huge uncertainty in the market, because certainly this area is a very desired area, if you could say that, with families for the schools and stuff that are around here.
Will this stamp duty changes make any difference for your situation?
Yes, it will. Yes, it'll make about, in where the bracket we're moving in, about €30,000, just shy of 30,000 for our move.
So are you happy with what Brian Cowan has done, or do you think he could have done more?
It's hard to know. As a second-time buyer, I'd like to see the mortgage interest relief on a monthly basis being passed on to us as well.
Meanwhile, Caroline Fanning has literally seen tens of thousands of euro fall off the price of her house.
I got a valuation carried out last summer by two estate agents, and I was given a valuation of €730,000, a three-bed semi-detached here in Dublin 18. I'm now asking price of 595,000, so that's €135,000 drop.
What do you make of what Brian Cowan announced?
I'm delighted with the announcements in the budget. I'm interested in a property, and I've calculated it. Today there's a saving of €25,160 applicable to me.
Do you think that this will spur everybody on? It'll rejuvenate everything?
I hope so. I work as a solicitor, and conveyancing is my main business. So I have seen a big slowdown in the whole conveyancing, because every solicitor has. So hopefully it will rejuvenate the market and get people buying houses again.
That's Katrina Perry reporting, 9:09.
Now, lots of talk in this budget about it being a green budget as well as being a property budget. But what is this going to mean in terms of our cars, our insulation and the whole business of our carbon dioxide emissions? Our environment correspondent, Paul Cunningham.
I think what we're doing is following our European partners and trying to link carbon emissions to economics. This is the first step in which you actually identify just how much carbon dioxide you're going to produce. I think the key point that's going to come out of today is we're going to find out what was the amount of carbon we produced in a draft form, at least, in 2006. Following on from that, it'll be broken down into sectors. You know, did it all come from transport? Did it come from agriculture? Usually agriculture has gone down, but I suspect we're probably going to see something of a change about in that. And then we're going to find out some of the measures that are going to be introduced above and beyond what's in the National Climate Change Strategy. In other words, what are the things they can link money to which are going to drive down emissions? Now, the government's stated objective is to reduce emissions by 3% year on year. I suspect they're not going to be able to show, you know, in 2008 we're going to reduce emissions by 3% by doing these particular things. I think what you'll probably find is they'll stretch it out over 5 years, so it'll be a little hard to identify just what's going to happen in 2008.
And then we have these major changes in how cars are taxed. Talk us through them.
Well, what we had in the budget announced by Brian Cowan yesterday was a change to vehicle registration tax. It used to be that you had the VRT applied depending on the size of your engine. From now on, when you go into the showroom on your new car, you will actually see, and in some they've already got them, is the amount of carbon it emits, and that therefore will be linked to the amount of VRT you will apply. The simple logic being, the more you pollute, the more you pay. Motor tax is going to follow on from it. Now, there was quite a bit of controversy yesterday. The motor tax seemed to be a blunt change. If you had a 2.5 litre car or above, you're going to have an 11% increase. If it's below that, you're going to have 9.5%. And that didn't seem to be rewarding people who had smaller cars. You know, if you were 1.4, if you're 1.6 or 1.9. But what the motor tax innovation will be to later on today is that if you're buying a new car from July 1st, that will also be solely linked to emissions and not engine size. So the change is coming, but it isn't retrospective.
Yeah, and it's only new cars that this is going to affect.
That's the key.
Drawn some criticism, hasn't it?
It has drawn some criticism. What the department seems to be saying is that it would be very difficult for them to work out in retrospect what the old cars might be. And I think that's one dilemma that they are facing. They can do it for new cars, simple to calculate. And what they don't want to do is start getting into assessments of old vehicles because that could take time and money.
Now, renewable energies and also energy conservation, a lot of houses built over recent years, extraordinary number of houses if you look at it in terms of the national stock, many of them built to very low standards in terms of insulation and in terms of efficiency. Is there anything in the budget and in Mr. Gormley's budget that is going to address any of that?
There was increases in the number of grants. Take, for example, insulation. That was one of the things which did get an increase in yesterday's budget. Just what we're going to hear later on today is unclear. Probably what they're going to do is apply the changes recently to building regulations and the grants announced yesterday and say that's going to reduce CO2 emissions by a certain amount. What you're not going to see is new money in that particular area. It'll be more about what the impact or effect is going to be.
That's Paul Cunningham, our environment correspondent, talking there about insulation and the like, and also about cars. And of course, by some measures, we are the most car-dependent nation on earth. So Colman O'Sullivan has been out this morning getting some reaction from motorists in Dublin city centre about the budget.
Fortunately, it's not going to really affect the taxi drivers because we are on a different tax system with our cars.
And how about the VRT for new cars?
The VRT has gone up, has it?
Well, if they're changing it so it'll be based on the emission, the CO2 emissions from the car.
Yeah. I think it's a good idea. The bigger an engine you have, the more you'll pay. Yeah, they do pollute more. Yeah.
Seems a little excessive, that's all I'd say. I haven't got much of the detail. I was working late last night, but it seems a little excessive so far.
And the VRT now on new cars be based on CO2 emissions?
I don't quite get that. I mean, there's some higher engine cars, much more efficient as well. It doesn't seem to be too well thought out.
Revolutionary. It's pretty good. No, it's really good. Gotta go now.
Well, I'm not particularly in favour of it given the car that I drive, but what can you do? I mean, the economy takes prevalence over personal expenses, so I think I'll be in favour of it.
I was just talking to my husband about it, saying I didn't really fully understand it, so he's going to, he said he's going to read the paper and check it out.
I think we've got a lot to learn about CO2 emissions and the amount that our cars pollute, and we'll be learning a lot over the next few days and indeed months and weeks about that. Colman O'Sullivan reporting there from Dublin City Centre at 4 minutes to nine.
And finally, this report about complaints by airline passengers. The report is from the European Consumer Centre, and if you've been listening to the bulletin, you have heard, for example, that Irish Airlines are responsible for almost a quarter of all complaints by airline passengers. This is in the EU. We're joined by Rosalind Quinlan, Marketing Manager of the European Consumer Centre Ireland. Good morning, Rosalind.
Good morning.
Just to be clear about this, what we're talking about here is not necessarily in per capita terms the biggest complainers, but in strict numerical terms, a quarter of all European complaints come from here.
Well, I think it's actually slightly less than that, Colin. The figure is actually 16% of complaints were made by Irish consumers, which is quite high, and you know, higher than the amount of complaints made by them last year. Now, there is quite an awareness of air passenger rights in Ireland, both through our own work and, you know, through I suppose the largest low fares carrier being based here, and Irish people are of course travelling more and more. But from the European Consumer Centre perspective, it's great that people are complaining and that they are more aware of their rights and their entitlements.
Right, so 16% of all complaints, not a quarter.
That's right.
Now, when you say complaints, do we know whether these complaints were upheld or not?
Well, you know, herein the issues lie, really, because we have quite a lot of problems with resolving complaints. In fact, almost a third of all complaints remain unresolved. And the reason for this is there's a lack of compliance with the legislation as it stands, so that we are looking for enforcement of the legislation by the relevant enforcement bodies. A lot of the time we see simply airlines failing to respond to people's, you know... Complaints.
Really?
Yeah. Absolutely.
Failing to respond. Goodness. And I see that a lot of the complaints are the usual stuff, luggage delays and cancellations. But in other words, you can't really give a judgment, or can you, about whether or not we happen to have lousy airlines or whether we're becoming good or maybe even unreasonable complainers?
Well, no, I think that people's complaints are genuinely, you know, relevant, and they should complain and should be encouraged to complain. But there is certainly a lack of compliance with the legislation and a lack of enforcement. In other sectors, you know, with regard to online shopping or in other areas that we work, we would see levels, you know, of resolved cases at around, you know, 10% of unresolved cases, I should say, whereas here we're at about 30%, as I say. So, you know, that's simply unacceptable.
Rosaline, thank you very much for talking to us. Rosaline Quinlan of the European Consumer Centre Ireland, 2:09.
And that's our lot for today. On sound, Noel Roberts, our editors, Brenda Fitzpatrick and Lisa Pereira. We're back tomorrow morning at 7. Until then, from all the team, a very good morning.